You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
It is so good to be with you, and my guest today is so well informed from multiple perspectives on the issue of sexuality, deviations from what we would call, you know, kind of your normal heterosexuality, and also knowing what the Catholic Church teaches about sexuality. We're going to be talking about issues such as gender ideology, same-sex attraction, and again, warning for young ears, we're going to be talking about what happens when people engage in same-sex intercourse and kind of how in reality male-female intercourse is the healthiest physically for our bodies and in other ways. So stay tuned, because it's some arguments that you really want to have in your pocket to help people see what is best for them in the long term and why the Catholic view of sexuality actually really is an answer to what we're looking for in the culture. So don't go away. My guest today is Michael Gasparo. He's a regular here on Trending. He is an associate marriage and family therapist. He's practicing under the supervision of Dr. Joseph Nicolosi Jr. at the Breakthrough Clinic. And he shares his personal testimony as a Catholic man who has come out of same-sex sexuality. And his professional work, he also works as a reintegrative therapist. So he'll share about this as we're working through things today. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Timmery. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you so much for being here. And I always love your perspective on these issues, because you really focus on helping people, whether it's with issues of pornography, same-sex attraction, you name it, to find a path of authentic freedom.
And the important thing to remember for your audience to keep in mind is that there are a lot of people who deal with a variety of sexual issues that differ from the most common norm of heterosexuality. And I'm passionate in helping those individuals deal with these sexual proclivities that don't fit in line with their conscience, and helping them live out their conscience according to Catholic teaching.
So what are we talking about essentially today? You guys, we're talking about chastity, and chastity is being faithful to your vocation, whether you're married, single, a priest, religious. That's so fundamental to who we are in living our Catholic identity. But in today's culture, Michael, you and I hear this all the time. You know, it's so common, and sometimes it's so convincing. These just super simple slogans, you know, live and let live. I feel like it's so hippie-esque in some sense, but it's so apparent from the sexual revolution. You know, ideas like love is love, sex is fine, anything and anywhere and whatever you want to do as long as there's consent. I mean, these arguments we hear that people think are just the greatest justification for alternative lifestyles that are harmful is what is really kind of become the norm in our culture. What are your initial thoughts when you hear simple arguments like this, even from your patients?
Well, for many people, their experiences do not equate to the phrase love is love. So when they engage, my patients engage with their same-sex behaviors or their behaviors towards fetish sexuality, which we can discuss more at another time if you're interested, it often causes internal distress. And while contemporary psychologists might say this is simply a result of their own insecurity about their proclivities, many of my clients say it's because of deeply held values, beliefs, and an understanding of their world that reinforces the truth and beauty of Catholic sexual teaching. So they not only believe that it's wrong, but they feel the physical, temporal, and spiritual effects of their behavior outside of the Catholic norm for two married people engaging in heterosexual sex.
What stands out to me about what you just said is that essentially when people say love is love and try to really justify alternative sexual lifestyles, what you're saying is actually these slogans and these claims actually are harming people, because the people who are living these experiences have deep-seated uneasiness about what they're experiencing.
And they have negative physical and emotional impacts from those behaviors. So it's not just that they feel distressed because they know it's wrong. It's that as Catholics, our faith and reason support one another. So there are real practical negative consequences to engaging in sexual behavior outside of our church's understanding of the healthy sexual norm.
I want to get your thoughts on this. And if you're just joining me, that is Michael Gasparo. He's an associate marriage and family therapist. And I mean, he's doing incredible work. He's a reintegrative therapist as well. You can learn more at reintegrativetherapy.com. Again, that's reintegrativetherapy.com, an excellent network of therapists. Michael, what I want to get your thoughts on is this one, especially in terms of what your clients are going through. There's this argument that really any sexual activity goes today, and what really kind of places like Planned Parenthood and others claim is necessary for good sexual intimacy are two elements, and really just one, consent. And they've really, you know, it's interesting because I was talking about sex education programs and just how horrific they are. But one of the big things I've seen changing in Planned Parenthood's approach is they're finally addressing STDs more. And it's all about not just consent, but also consent with condoms and so forth, and quote unquote protection. And a lot of those videos that they use that are meant to be for teenagers, the couples that they'll put on the screen to talk about consent are same-sex couples and so forth. So what are your clients saying about the issue of consent in their own sex lives?
It's important for your audience to remember that consent is not the only basis for which sexual morality lies. What I mean by that is that it is possible for two people to consent to very nefarious or negative things. And I think you're bringing up a great point by highlighting that they propose everything is fine if you're consenting, whereas in reality, that's not always the case. A great example, many clients of mine deal with fetishes. A fetish is a fixation on a sexual object that is often not human. So for some men, a common fetish, believe it or not, is transvestic fetishism. Now, for your younger listeners, they might want to tune out for a moment, but this is men who are fixated on sexual objects of women's clothing, either wearing or touching them. This has a negative impact on many Catholic people's sexual functioning. If somebody's consent alone merited that as a good thing, then my clients wouldn't need help, but they need help because it's distressing and negatively impacting their marriages when they are only able to sexually function utilizing a fetish object to support their sexuality. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we help them look at what is underneath the trauma that fuels these initial fetish developments, and we resolve the original trauma. As we resolve traumas, unmet needs, neglect, and addictions, the fetish begins to shift as a result, and their marriages improve. Mm-hmm. Now, if consent was all that was required for a healthy marriage, it wouldn't be an issue, but it is an issue because consent alone does not make something healthy. Transvestic fetishism is unhealthy.
You know, and I want to talk to that point just for a second. If you're listening, maybe this isn't the right episode to be listening to given your current circumstances and who might be around. So please don't give up on this episode because there's some important information that will really help you better understand not just the Catholic Church's teaching on all sexuality, but why aren't people getting married today? Why are people having less sex? And why is the same-sex issue such a big deal? So you can head over to radiotrending.com. You can subscribe there or even just pull up this episode on our website so that you can listen to it on the go at your leisure when the correct ears are around to hear this. So, Michael, when you're talking about this fetish issue with regard to consent, people are consenting to various things that, and sometimes they'll consent to sex, but they're not consenting to a certain type of sex, which is interesting because we'll be talking about a piece from Psychology Today a little later on, and they talk about perhaps one of the reasons why people, young people in particular, are having less sex today is because the expectations in sexual intimacy is essentially bad sex. It's not real, and sorry to be, you know, blunt, but we've got to go there. Genital sex, right? It is often induced into fetishes and various things such as oral and anal engagement that a lot of people, that's not what they were consenting to and that's not what they want. So a consent to sex is different from what people think they're consenting to.
And realistically, We know that good research, which we'll discuss more soon, I'm sure, supports that penile-vaginal intercourse is not only the norm, but the healthiest emotionally, psychologically, and physically for men and women to participate in. So, of course, if you deviate from this healthy norm, which our Catholic Church has told us over and over again, supported tradition and by Scripture, then there will be consequences, and one of those consequences is simply that it's just not as pleasurable and not as interesting in the long term. Maybe in the short term, but it ain't going to be that in the long term, because we know, biology tells us, you're going to want to revisit the thing that helps solidify the stability of the family.
You know, let's dive into this, because there's a lot of really good research. And Michael, you actually sent this article over to me a little before Christmas. Fantastic research done in the Journal of Sex Medicine. The article is Relative Health Benefits of Different Sexual Activities. And essentially what comes out in this journal is an emphasis, as Michael just said, that it's only penile vaginal intercourse that has a positive both psychological and physiological health elements to it. And this is so important, because what it's saying is that the bodies are created to work in a particular way. And when we deviate from that, engaging in anal or oral sexual engagement, the benefits aren't there. And in fact, it actually has negative benefits in some cases. So I'm looking at an article that was sent over, and it's actually evaluating this study from the Journal of Sex Medicine. It's written by Christopher Kaxer, and I may have said that wrong, but the article is titled, did I say it right?
It's Dr. Kaxer, and he's actually also part of the Word on Fire Institute with Dr. Bishop Barron, so
he's got
a lot of good stuff online.
Awesome. Yes, the article is at the Public Discourse. I'll go ahead and tweet it out. You can find that at Timmerie, that's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, if you're interested in looking into some of this research. But Michael, what are some of your initial thoughts when you see this in light of your work?
My first thought was, of course, because it only makes sense that research, pursuit of truth, reinforced what the Catholic Church is already telling us as truth, which is that sex between men and women, in the penile-vaginal intercourse specifically, is the best way to achieve positive, healthy sexual stability and positive benefits from sex. And my other reaction was, there's no shortcut to true, good, and lasting healthy sexuality. There's just no shortcut. So that means for everyone, and the men and women have to work at it, and we have to be willing to take seriously the Church's teachings on this topic if we want to even have a chance at a truly healthy, developed, robust, and positive sexual self.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Michael, and you know, when you're saying that, I love that you say there's no shortcut, because I think that when the girls come in who are in crisis pregnancy into the crisis pregnancy centers, or they're going to the abortion clinic, they thought that saying yes was the shortcut to feeling loved, to being loved, to that pleasure, both on the side of men and women. But reality is that feeling of pleasure, whether it's physical pleasure or feeling loved and affirmed, it's not for the long term. And I think that that's what's so difficult when people are engaging in oral and anal sex, because even if they're heterosexual or homosexually oriented, it doesn't matter, because in reality, the body is not created to be that way, and it's not oriented toward creating a long-term commitment that is faithful.
Absolutely. And I have found in my own moments of temptation in my life, because we all have them, that it's often a shortcut I'm looking for. What will help me feel good in this moment right now? And if I remind myself in those moments that the truth of our Church teachings is that if we can look towards a longer, bigger picture, it will guide us towards lasting gratification instead of short-term or in-the-moment gratification.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's talk about masturbation. I know we kind of have to go there because it really is important to this issue. And a lot of people go, whoa, okay, what are we talking about? And a lot of people actually don't know the Church does have teaching on masturbation. And you guys, it's a no-go. And this is what's problematic, because I was actually taking one of Planned Parenthood's sex education quizzes online the other day, and you could put in what age you are. And it was really interesting to me, because I ended up putting in that I was 13 at one point and 17 And I was grateful that they didn't encourage sex for the 13-year-olds, but what they did encourage was masturbation. So if you're taking any type of educational information, you're really young. The pro-abortion, pro-sexual liberation, pro-LGBTQ ideology is going to say, just start exploring your body. Start enjoying your body. Take pleasure from it. Even medical doctors are saying this to people who are having issues, especially for women, with their, you know, for example, ovary pain and so forth. Or maybe you need some sexual release. Maybe that's what will make you feel better. But in reality, what this journal is pointing to yet again is that actually, and tell me your thoughts here, masturbation is also related to poor mental health satisfaction.
Increased masturbation was associated with increased depression and anxiety. And some of these studies were done in secular countries through governments. These are not Christian therapists and such who are trying to prove the point about masturbation is bad, et cetera, et cetera. So they're absolutely worth looking at. And what you really highlighted is that intrinsically, when we're longing for something, if we go for the fastest, quickest fix, that does not always lead to the best outcomes. And of course, masturbation is a temptation for young people and often for older people. The caution I have when we talk about this is we want to be careful not to shame young people. And I know that's not what you're endorsing, but sometimes religious people can speak about masturbation in a way where they are very harsh, critical, and shaming towards young people. And it's important that they understand that we need to be patient with young people as they will make mistakes and fall and sometimes be more successful than others, just as adults do. And so that's the thing that I think we can do to really counter some of this negative stereotype about religious people, is that we stand for truth. We know masturbation isn't helping young people. It's not helping their mental health outcomes. It's not helping them explore their sexuality, as they say. It's really turning people inward, decreasing social output and having negative possible effects on mental health. So we want to encourage people to look at this as a yes to something else and not a no to masturbation. It's a yes to chastity. It's a yes to freedom. It's a yes to being able to engage in a way that's healthy and not encouraging young people to turn inward on themselves and only focus on their own sexual pleasure.
Well, and some of the things people aren't talking about, and if you're just joining us, that's Michael Gasparo. He is working at the Breakthrough Clinic and is doing awesome work as a reintegrative therapist. You can learn more at reintegrativetherapy.com. What I was going to say is that people also aren't talking about that many men are having a difficulty performing anymore. And we are seeing advertisements all the time for things like Viagra, among the other newer ones. I don't watch as much of television as I used to, so I'm sure there are others being advertised, especially if you turn on the sports channel, which is really interesting. And part of the cause for that is the increase in masturbation that isn't even making people happy. So the question is if, like Michael's saying, if we're going to say yes to our sexuality, it's not just yes to momentary pleasure, it's yes to both now being faithful to yourself in whatever lifestyle or whatever state of life you're in now, but to your vocation, as you know, one day you're going to be married. And do you want to have, you know, a decrease in ability to engage in true lasting sexual intimacy with your lifelong spouse?
And many of my clients need help overcoming the habit of masturbation. And so there are many men and women who are sold a bill of goods as teenagers. They're told, just explore your body. Just do whatever you want. It's fine. It'll just fade with time. And really, when they become adults, they're addicted to behaviors that are isolating and that are disconnecting them from real sexual intimacy with a partner one day. So there are real consequences, and pornography is often accompanying masturbation in today's world, let's be honest. So porn and masturbation become a habitual issue that deter people from functionally developing a healthy, adult, heterosexual, integrated self, and they need help. So again, if people need help with this, not only are spiritual measures in place in our churches that can help you, but there is psychological resources and support available through places like the Breakthrough Clinic, where we help people overcome addiction by looking at whatever traumas, behavioral addictions, neglect, or emotional regulation issues are contributing to these habitual experiences.
And I just want to emphasize one more time, we're talking about, I mean, this research is totally secular, coming from all over the world, emphasizing that it's only penile vaginal sexual intimacy that shows the benefits, both physically, psychologically, you know, mentally, all of these elements that have positive side to it. And the reality is that we can take that one step further, and it's actually people who are married and engaging in heterosexual sexual intimacy that are experiencing the most sexual satisfaction in their relationships and feeling the closeness that they long for. It, why would we go for something less than that, especially in a time where mental health is such an issue, Michael? You know, people are seeing this increase in depression and anxiety. I think it's because people just don't know what sex is for and that it actually really does matter.
And that study you're mentioning, the article with several studies actually listed, highlights that penile vaginal intercourse unencumbered by contraceptives is actually the highest and most likely to achieve these positive mental health, physical health, and sexual health benefits. So no surprise to Catholics, there are negative impacts of contraceptives being utilized in penile vaginal intercourse.
Right. Well, so we're talking about barrier methods as well, because a lot of people say, okay, I'll agree with you on hormonal contraceptives and so forth. I see, you know, the ability to act as an abortifacient, the harm toward women, but why can't I just use a condom or another barrier type of method? And this is where a lot of the studies come out. And I said this a couple weeks ago on air, and we've got to be really blunt, but when a man does not release inside of a woman, there are there is a difference in terms of what the man experiences in terms of orgasm, in terms of the connectedness and bondedness. There's a really big difference. And so whether people are using the pull-out method or a condom, that satisfaction and those benefits are not there in the same way.
And I think that people know this intuitively. This is something that I even heard Martin Luther once wrote about in some of his early writings, ironically, even though he left the Catholic Church. So this message is probably cross faith-wise. There's a lot of people that think this and intuit this, but they're afraid to put it to words because it's almost taboo to be against contraceptives today. So I think it's important that as Catholics we're bold and we stand boldly for the truth of this, and we talk about it with enthusiasm. And even sometimes, I know, Timory, it can be awkward, but if you're with close friends and there's an open, honest conversation about sexuality, talking about it in a lighthearted way can help make things less awkward too, and jokes can help a little bit, but it's important to remember that we want to talk about it in a way that's not like naysaying, finger wagging, but that's exciting and celebratory. Like, think about how awesome it is that if you have sex with your wife and it's not encumbered with contraceptives, it'll be joyful and complete, and it'll lead you to these awesome health benefits, and it'll be open to life. And we can speak about it in a way that's positive and not so naysaying, as it were.
That's Michael Gasparo. You're listening to Trending with Timmer. You know, and Michael, you might find this as well. I'll find sometimes I'll be invited into a conversation or a certain situation because maybe there's a debate having to do with sexual intimacy, and people know, you know, the cuffs come off. Timmery's going to talk about this and be blunt versus everyone else is kind of like cowering because, you know, their modesty is there, which is a good and beautiful thing. But here's the thing, you guys, and I think it's important for especially people of the older generation to recognize these younger generations right now speak about these things very bluntly. And so we need to give them the answers very clearly and speak where they're at.
I agree, and euphemisms aren't as helpful when porn hardly utilizes euphemism.
Yes.
So much of this sexuality people are exposed to is through graphic internet pornography, and yet we're afraid to say words like orgasm.
Or sex,
we can't settle for, or sex. We can't settle for being broad and unclear whenever the internet is quite clear with their version of the story.
And you know what I hear very often, and it's actually something I hear as a compliment to you when you're on as well, is that it's refreshing to hear such a clear conversation that isn't kind of afraid of going there in the conversation, because the reality is that these questions surrounding sexuality are actually becoming very tricky, and we're having to have conversations that people weren't having before. And that's why we need to be willing to talk about, what is sex for? Why is it so important? Because it's going to really appeal to the longing of the heart in real long-term dreams rather than just focusing on the here and now. We'll be right back here on Trending with Michael Gasparo, marriage and family therapist.
Timory will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We are back, a topic for not so little ears today. So feel free to catch the podcast later on at radiotrending.com. You can also listen if you're listening on Relevant Radio. Relevant Radio has all of the episodes of Trending available online, even the ones that they're not airing throughout the week. So if you miss an episode, just head over to relevantradio.com. I have with me today Michael Gasparo, and we're going to be talking about why are our young people having less sex than ever before. I'm really looking forward to getting his keen insights as a marriage and family therapist. But first, a message from our sponsors. Solidarity HealthShare is simple to help pay for affordable, quality healthcare. They enable the community to share in each other's eligible medical expenses. You choose the doctors that you want to see. Even integrative and alternative medical treatments are eligible. Solidarity HealthShare helps pay for NAPRO technology and costs associated with natural family planning. Solidarity HealthShare is dedicated to both faith and your healthcare. Information is available at solidarityhealthshare.org. That's solidarityhealthshare.org. Michael Gasparo is here. Michael, when you hear this, what are your first thoughts? Young people are having less sex than ever before. What do you think is causing this?
First of all, I was surprised to hear this, quite frankly, because it doesn't seem always like that is the case. But then when I thought more about it and I read the article and discussion, I actually am not surprised. The air quotes hookup culture is pretty common today, but that fosters a lot of deep-seated insecurity and fear and uncertainty about sexual relationships. And my thought is that if people were in more stable, long-term relationships, namely heterosexual marriage, they would be having a lot more sexual activity in their life. Mm-hmm. Because that type of relationship fosters regular and consistent intercourse.
Absolutely. And I think that that's what's interesting is there's also a lot of information indicating that even married couples are having less sex. Now, I'll throw one piece in there, and I want to get your thoughts on this as well. I know that since both pornography and contraception have really been the law of the land, we see that a woman's body's in a state of pseudo-pregnancy, and it actually decreases her libido. Not only that, this is what else is interesting. Anxiety and depression medication also decreases libido. You know, kind of engaging in masturbation, all these different things decreases a person's sex drive. And so in some ways, it's not that surprising to hear that even married people are having less sex than ever before.
And many of my clients that I work with as a therapist struggle with pornography addiction, whether they're heterosexual or they have same-sex attraction and they have pornography addictions, or if they have a fetish and they have some addiction to that kind of a masturbatory experience. Many of them utilize these addictive behaviors as ways of avoiding sexual intimacy. Now, it might not be intentional that way, but as a result of their inability to overcome these addictive issues, they have avoided serious relationships that could have developed into long-term, stable, sexually fulfilling heterosexual marriages.
I really think that there are some really key insights that came out. So I'm looking at this article from Psychology Today, and it points to various things that this author, I'm looking at Bella DiPaolo, is saying she sees as being problematic for why people are having less sex, specifically young people. And some of those include, and I thought this was interesting, pressure from parents and how, you know, parents even of their college students are putting a lot of pressure on young people today to perform. And so people, and sadly, it's not just that they're having less time for a sex life. I think more importantly, it's showing they have less time for friends because they look at friends as getting in the way of their future. And it's not just that the culture is fueling that in terms of you've got to get a job, you've got to get straight A's. It's that sometimes parents are fueling this lack of connectedness as well.
And I think it's important for your audience to remember, too, that we don't know exactly all of the reasons why people are having less sex, but these are good insights to consider, including that the author of the article cited a study saying that men are masturbating much more than they were 20 years ago, and women increased significantly in their masturbation statistics as well. And what does masturbation do? It isolates us from others. It keeps us focused inward instead of focused outward.
You know, it's interesting because I know sometimes statistics go over our heads, but the rate of increase in masturbation has been huge. We've seen between 1992 and 2014, I mean, the rate has doubled for men in terms of the number of men masturbating, and it's tripled for women. And I think that that's what we can't forget to discuss, you guys, is women are struggling, especially young girls, with pornography and masturbation as well. I was just talking to a client of mine at the Pilates studio the other day, and she was talking about how when her daughter went into middle school, she asked her mom, "What's porn?" She said, because I was talking to some of the girls at school, and they were all talking about how they watch a lot of porn. These are middle school kids we're talking about, and a lot of people just want to dismiss porn as being a man's issue. But the exposure is happening younger and younger, and it's being so common for these sexual deviancies now to be fostered in young women as well, fostering this LGBTQ movement and lifestyle.
And it wasn't long ago that people considered masturbation, especially habitual masturbation, as a sexual dysfunction of sorts. So it's interesting that it's becoming the accepted norm to encourage unabated, all-encompassing masturbation at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not part of our Catholic understanding of the world and what we think is best for people, but it is being pushed at an alarming rate to young people across the country.
The masturbation issue, you know, we have to keep coming back to it. And I know this is one where people start to squirm, but I want to tell just a little story about this as well, because we've got to be willing to talk about how it's not okay. Some people need explanations, but I think that Michael really hit the nail on the head earlier when he said, actually, a lot of people kind of know this naturally. I remember when I was speaking at a summer camp a couple years ago, and one of the counselors claimed there was an issue with masturbation in the boys' bunk area, and they said, you know, Tim Ray, I really want you to talk about masturbation tomorrow during one of your talks. And I said, you know what, I can, but I think a guy should talk about it given that's happening with the boys. And it was so simple. When one of the male speakers was talking to the boys in a men's session, he just said, hey, you know, masturbation's wrong, right? And some of them were like, wait, really? We didn't know that. And he's like, yeah, so just don't do it. And to them, they're like, oh, okay. Like, sometimes we don't have to go into an in-depth explanation. There's shame that is naturally associated with sinful behaviors. And sometimes we know we just need people to help affirm and tell us that. It's like reading a good business book on leadership. A lot of the times there are things that we inherently know, but we just need to be told still.
And it's also good to remember, too, that not every young boy or young girl is doing those things for the same reasons. Some people are more inclined to utilize masturbation because of, as the catechism says, the proclivity towards anxiety or other issues. So any situation with young people and masturbation is going to be unique. But you're right. Speaking to the larger population of just helping inform their conscience can be a good start. Look, this is not something that our church says is right. And then if they want to have a deeper conversation, you can go from there. But it's good to remember that there are unique circumstances to take into consideration so that we talk with gentleness, too, for some people who are really struggling with this issue along the way.
Here's one of the things that the article in Psychology Today talks about. Michael, and I want to get your thoughts. I personally think when she's talking about this article, she, you know, is throwing all this information out there, both as a psychologist, but also, you know, we always throw our opinion in some ways. And it's interesting because, you know, one of the things that's mentioned in a book that she's pulling data and information from is the claim that Americans, although they've ditched kind of a lot of traditional viewpoints, having a lifelong partner, basically a marriage, is still a strong indicator of overall well-being. She kind of says, I disagree with it, but doesn't give any arguments, essentially. Michael, what are your thoughts in talking about how marriage is still what is showing that makes people healthier, happier, you know, stronger in the long term, live longer lives?
I think the burden of proof rests on her to prove that that is not the case.
Right.
So I think that it's a bit absurd that she makes this claim without a lot of solid data or evidence to support it. We know as Catholics that the family is the building block of society, and that supporting and strengthening the family, which includes having a healthy sexual relationship with your married partner, if possible, is an important part of that bond, because not only fosters intimacy, but it fosters the procreation of children. So for someone to say that that is unimportant or somehow not healthy is so patently absurd, it almost doesn't even merit discussion, except for to say, prove it.
Yeah.
If you're going to make that claim, come with some strong points.
She doesn't prove it anywhere, and that's where I could tell someone's a little too single and unhappy in this instance. You know, I think she was kind of justifying a lifestyle, and that's why even when you get advice from people, you always have to really scrutinize it in some ways. You know, think about what's being said. Don't just take what the church teaches, but understand what it teaches. And kind of to counter her argument or false claim that she makes, there was a study, and we talked about it a lot when I was working with Trent Horn over at Catholic Answers on Hearts and Minds. It was a study that came out of Harvard. It was nearly an 80-year-long study, and it showed that the happiest people were the people who had lifelong lasting relationships, ultimately people who were married, who had strong faith beliefs, but that relational element was so important, and it pointed to this element of marriage. Not that it's easy, but it's important to have those relationships.
And don't forget that sometimes people like this woman in this article aren't coming at the discussion about marriage with the same understanding of what we consider marriage as Catholics: full, fruitful, faithful, all of those tenets of marriage that make it have the positive benefits that we're discussing. So it's also good to differentiate that maybe there are aspects of secular marriage that aren't as beneficial as a true Catholic sacramental marriage.
We'll be back on Trending with my guest, Michael Gasparo. We'll be talking about what is sex for? Why is it so good? Why is the complementarity of sexual intimacy so important?
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
We're back. Michael Gasparo of the Breakthrough Clinic is with me. He's an associate marriage and family therapist. You can learn more about reintegrative therapy at reintegrativetherapy.com. We've been talking about sexual intimacy, contraception, gender ideology, same-sex sexual activity, what is making people most happy, why people are having less sex, which leads us to, why is sex such a good thing? And more importantly, why is the complementarity between male and female so important? And we need to start by helping to both articulate for ourselves and others one of the great teachings that the church has really emphasized with regard to sexual intimacy has been from Humana Vitae, when Pope Paul VI talked about, now St. Paul VI, by the way, that every sexual act is meant to be unitive and procreative, that it's supposed to be for the good of the spouses, to unite the two spouses together, but also it's meant to be open to any new human life that might come forth from it, because the relationship of a man and a woman is meant to bear fruit and go out and do good. And that includes creating new life for the glory of God. And so Michael Gasparo is with me. I love talking with you about this complementarity of sexual intimacy because it's so important. And I know it's part of what inspires you in your work as well.
Yes, in my work as a reintegrative therapist, I work with a lot of men who have same-sex attraction, and also men who deal with other sexual fetishes that prevent them from having functional heterosexual intimacy. And for these men, it's intuitive. They know there's something that's just not right about those attractions and that they won't lead them to the fulfillment of an opposite-sex heterosexual marriage. And so it's something that, while at the macro level, the large level, societal scale, we often talk about, to the clients I know and work with each week, they need help to find their way back to that established norm. And for somebody that is experiencing disorder or sexual chaos, as it were, it's so clear about the complementarity because they sense how off the opposite is. Mm. So for someone who's never dealt with anything other than, let's say, a more ordered heterosexual desire, they might have a harder time viscerally understanding just how destructive alternatives can feel.
Well, and it's interesting because we started the show talking about how it's only penile anal sexual intercourse that brings about, good health outcomes, psychological health outcomes, and so forth. But when you look at the culture, they are proposing two ideologies that are really becoming one, and that is of gender ideology and radical feminism. Gender ideology, the LGBTQ issue, is rendering sexual intimacy infertile because it's engaging in anal intimacy that doesn't work that way and posing a lot of health concerns. And then radical feminism is posing that sexual intimacy is infertile as well because it's either engaging in anal oral engagement or it is engaging in contraceptive sex. But the reality is that it's creating a heart problem in our culture. And we're seeing this with the older generations all over the world. I mean, go to Hungary, go to Italy, even come here to the United States and speak to someone who maybe only had one or two children. They will tell you, I wish I had more children. I wish I focused more on relationships. I wish I had a lasting marriage. These are the longings of the hearts of our people who have gone through this and wish they had it.
And penile vaginal intercourse between married couples fosters these societal building blocks that are also a part of sexual intimacy and its function. So the church cares about the individual's sexual pleasure, the individual's procreative experience with their family, but the church also cares about functional, healthy societies. And that is where individual radical autonomy begins to really unravel at a large scale. If you're only concerned with just your sexual intimacy and just your pleasure, you lose sight of your role in God's story and the bigger picture of your life as it fits into the societal whole.
Let's talk, Michael, a little bit about the complementarity. That's Michael Gasparo of the Breakthrough Clinic. You can learn more about him and his work at reintegrativetherapy.com, which he is a member of as a associate therapist. Complementarity, I think when we think of sexual intimacy, or let's say the sexual urge, intimacy, this desire for intimacy actually points to complementarity, and it points to this desire for what is other, and not just, you know, someone else, but someone that's other than me, that's different than me, that complements me. When you're working with your clients, it sounds like they're really longing for that otherness, and they want to get that longing for that otherness back in terms of, you know, searching out, especially because you work with men, the complementarity of a woman. Can you speak to that?
For many of the men I work with, they have often felt too much familiarity with the realm of the feminine and struggled to adapt to their identity as belonging in the world of the masculine. So as many of them come over time to be a greater awareness of their masculine identity and their God-given masculine wholeness, they then find more intrigue and mystery and a desire to pursue the world of the feminine through heterosexual engagement.
This really stands out, and I know you and I have talked about this before on the show, where Dr. Joseph Nicolosi Sr., in his book, and the name is not coming, How to Raise Your Children. What's the name of the book? I'm not getting it in my head right now.
How to Prevent Homosexuality.
There we go.
A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality is
Thank
what it's
you.
Actually the full title.
Thank
it's
you.
Controversial, to say the least.
Very controversial. And in fact, not even available on places such as Amazon. So you have to do a little bit of research to get that book anymore. It was pulled off of Amazon just over this past year. But it talks a lot about what Michael's saying, in that when especially young boys are, let's say, extremely overcoddled by the mother, separated from the father by the mother, or rejected by the father. And we could go into all kinds of different circumstances, that it fosters this femininity in the man that can cause serious long-term issues. And that's why that desire for sexual complementarity dissipates.
And there are a complex combination of these factors of nature and nurture that can lead to this sense of dissociation from a man's heterosexual self. And what we want to do with our clients is to help them address those root causes, like you mentioned, family dynamics, behavioral addictions, And then many times that shift towards heterosexuality comes as a result, and to different degrees for different people, but even still, many clients find that they're able to better understand themselves as a child of God and better accept themselves as they are, even if their homosexual temptations persist to some degree. And so what I want to highlight for your listeners is that there is more than one way to respond to same-sex attraction. While the culture tells you you can only respond by engaging with those homosexual ideas and fantasies, we are here to tell you that the Catholic Church identifies and acknowledges it is your right to respond according to your conscience, and there is help, and my clients deserve the right to seeking that help through spiritual or psychological resources.
And I want to name that book, and there are other great books by Dr. Joseph Nicolosi. It's, again, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality. I'll post a link to it in the podcast section. If you head over to radiotrending.com and pull up the podcast, you'll see all of the notes. Michael, let's talk about this next level. I think a lot of people are, you know, engaging in this hookup culture or engaging, you know, maybe in an alternative sexual lifestyle that is causing problems. When they want something deeper, what is kind of the next level in helping to counsel people for you to help direct people that really it's a complementarity of sexual intimacy, and it's not just sex itself, but the relational side of the relationship that they're looking for?
It depends on each client and where they are in their own journey, but it's a great place to start by asking questions. And I'll say, even outside of counseling, if you have friends or family who are struggling with sexual acting out in ways that are contradictory to their faith or their conscience, begin by listening and asking questions. What are they seeking for? Now, Timur, you've mentioned a lot the longings of the human heart. And oftentimes, that when people engage in promiscuity and other things, there is an emotional seeking that is happening underneath. If it's acceptance or a desire for connection, or perhaps to sense that they feel safe or secure, if we can help our friends and family identify what they're looking for with whatever disordered sexual practice they're seeking, we can help them ask a question that will build insight. Where can I get that in a positive way? People need those things, right? They need to feel accepted and loved and connected and bonded and safe. So what we want to do is help them raise their awareness of how to get that in healthier, more sustainable, and morally appropriate ways.
And I love the example you gave a while back when you were on the show where you talk about when someone's looking at pornography and they're in that moment, you kind of have to ask the question, you know, imagine that you're there and you're, you know, just starting to look at the pornography. What are you looking for in that moment? Are you looking, you know, for connectedness? What might it be? These are questions that we can ask ourselves even when we are tempted in certain circumstances.
Absolutely. And what is the expression? Wherefore, but by the grace of God, go I. I speak about these things with the humility to say that no one is perfect. We're all in this together, and we're here as Catholics to support each other in the mystical body of Christ as we strive to integrate our sexuality into our personhood according to our virtue of chastity.
Please head over to reintegrativetherapy.com. You can also find links to the show website, radiotrending.com, for Michael and his work and the awesome counseling that they are giving to people who need this authentic truth surrounding who they are in sexual intimacy in a very broken culture.
This has been Trending with Timory. To book her to speak or learn more about her guests, visit radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.